until I reached the kitchen door. I ran. Oh, how I ran. I don't think anyone saw me. They were all too busy eating. But to reach the door leading to the kitchen, I had to cross the main entrance to the dining room. I was just about to do this when in poured a great flood of females. I pressed myself against the wall, clutching the bottle. At first I saw only the shoes and ankles of these women who were surging in through the door, but when I glanced up a bit higher, I knew at once who they were. They were the witches, coming in to dinner. I waited until they had all passed me by. Then I dashed on towards the kitchen door. A waiter opened it to go in. I nipped in after him and hid behind a big garbage bin on the floor. I stayed there for several minutes, just listening to all the talk and the racket. By golly, what a place that kitchen was! The noise, and the steam, and the clatter of pots and pans, and the cooks all shouting, and the waiters all rushing in and out from the dining room, yelling the food orders to the cooks. 4 soups and 2 lambs and 2 fish for table 28. 3 apple pies and 2 strawberry ice creams for number 17. Stuff like that going on all the time. Not far above my head, there was a handle sticking out from the side of the garbage bin. Still clutching the bottle, I gave a leap, turned a somersault in the air, and caught hold of the handle with the end of my tail. Suddenly, there I was, swinging to and fro, upside down. It was terrific! I loved it! This, I told myself, is how a trapeze artist in a circus must feel as he goes swishing through the air high up in the circus tent. The only difference was that his trapeze could only swing backwards and forwards. My trapeze, my tail, could swing me in any direction I wanted. Perhaps I would become a circus mouse after all. Just then, a waiter came in with a plate in his hand and I heard him saying, "The old hag on table 14 says this meat is too tough. She wants another portion." One of the cooks said, "Give me a plate." I dropped to the floor and peeked round the garbage bin. I saw the cook scrape the meat off the plate and slap another bit on. Then he said, "Come on, boys, give us some gravy." He carried the plate round to everyone in the kitchen, and do you know what they did? Every one of those cooks and kitchen boys spat onto the old lady's plate. "See how she likes it now," said the cook, handing the plate back to the waiter. Quite soon, another waiter came in and he shouted, "Everyone in the big RSPCC party wants the soup." That's when I started sitting up and taking notice. I was all ears now. I edged a bit further round the garbage bin so that I could see everything that was going on in the kitchen. A man with a tall white hat, who must have been the head chef, shouted, "Put the soup for the big party in the larger silver soup tureen." I saw the head chef place a huge silver basin onto the wooden side bench that ran along the whole length of the kitchen against the opposite wall. "Into that silver basin is where the soup is going," I told myself. "So that's where the stuff in my little bottle must go as well." I noticed that high up near the ceiling, above the side bench, there was a long shelf crammed with saucepans and frying pans. "If I can somehow clamber up onto that shelf," I thought, "then I've got it made. I shall be directly above the silver basin. But first, I must somehow get across to the other side of the kitchen, and then up onto the middle shelf." A great idea came to me. Once again, I jumped up and hooked my tail around the handle of the garbage bin. Then, hanging upside down, I began to swing. Higher and higher I swung. I was remembering the trapeze artist in the circus I had seen last Easter and the way he had got the trapeze swinging higher and higher and higher and had then let go and gone flying through the air. So just at the right moment, at the top of my swing, I let go with my tail and went soaring clear across the kitchen and made a perfect landing on the middle shelf. "By golly," I thought, "what marvellous things a mouse can do. And I'm only a beginner." No one had seen me. They were all far too busy with their pots and pans. From the middle shelf, I somehow managed to shinny up a little water pipe in the corner, and in no time at all, I was on the very top shelf, just under the ceiling, among all the saucepans and the frying pans. I knew that no one could possibly see me up there. It was a superposition, and I began working my way along the shelf until I was directly above the big, empty silver basin they were going to pour the soup into. I put down my bottle. I unscrewed the top and crept to the edge of the shelf and quickly poured what was in it straight into the silver basin below. The next moment, one of the cooks came along with a gigantic saucepan of steaming green soup and poured the whole lot into the silver basin. He put the lid on the basin and shouted, "Soup for the big party! All ready to go out!" Then a waiter arrived and carried the silver basin away. I had done it! Even if I never got back alive to my grandmother, the witches were still going to get the mouse maker. I left the empty bottle behind a large saucepan and began working my way back along the top shelf. It was much easier to move about without the bottle. I began using my tail more and more. I swung from the handle of one saucepan to the handle of another all the way along that top shelf, while far below me, cooks and waiters were all bustling about and kettles were steaming and pans were spluttering and pots were boiling, and I thought to myself, oh boy, this is the life. What fun it is to be a mouse doing an exciting job like this. I kept right on swinging. I swung most marvellously from handle to handle, and I was enjoying myself so much that I completely forgot I was in full view of anyone in the kitchen who might happen to glance upwards. What came next happened so quickly I had no time to save myself. I heard a man's voice yelling, "A mouse! Look at that dirty little mouse!" And I caught a glimpse below me of a white-coated figure in a tall white hat, and then there was a flash of steel as the carving knife whizzed through the air, and there was a shoot of pain in the end of my tail, and suddenly I was falling and falling headfirst towards the floor. Even as I fell, I knew just what had happened. I knew that the tip of my tail had been cut off, and that I was about to crash onto the floor, and everyone in the kitchen would be after me. "A mouse!" they were shouting. "A mouse! A mouse! Catch it, quick!" I hit the floor and jumped up and ran for my life. All around me there were big black boots going stamp, 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 and I dodged around them and ran and ran and ran, twisting and turning and dodging and swerving across the kitchen floor. "Get it!" they were shouting. "Kill it! Stamp on it!" The whole floor seemed to be full of black boots stamping away at me, and I dodged and swerved and twisted and turned, and then in sheer desperation, hardly knowing what I was doing, wanting only a place to hide, I ran up the trouser leg of one of the cooks and clung to his sock. "Hey!" the cook shouted. "Jeepers creepers, he's gone at my trouser! Hold on, boys, I'll get him this time!" The man's hands began slap-slapping at the trouser leg, and now I really was going to get smashed if I didn't move quickly. There was only one way to go, and that was up. I dug my little claws into the hairy skin of the man's leg and scuttled upwards higher and higher, past the calf and past the knee and on to the thigh. "Holy smoke!" the man was yelling. "It's going all the way up! It's going right up my leg!" I heard shrieks of laughter coming from the other cooks, but I can promise you I wasn't laughing myself. I was running for my life. The man's hands were slap, slap, slapping all around me, and he was jumping up and down as though he was standing on hot bricks, and I kept climbing and I kept dodging, and very soon I reached the very top of the trouser leg, and there was nowhere else to go. "Help, help, help!" the man was screaming. "It's in my knickers! It's running round in my flaming knickers! Get it out! Someone help me to get it out!" "Take off your trousers, you silly slob," someone else shouted. "Pull down your pants and we'll soon catch him." I was in the middle of the man's trousers now, in the place where the two trouser legs meet and the zip begins. It was dark and awfully hot in there. I knew I had to keep going. I dashed onward and found the top of the other trouser leg. I went down it like greased lightning and came out at the bottom of it, and once again I was on the floor. I heard the stupid cook still shouting, "It's in my trousers! Get it out! Will somebody please help me to get it out before it bites me?" I caught a flashing glimpse of the entire kitchen staff crowding round him and laughing their heads off, and nobody saw the little brown mouse as it flew across the floor and dived into a sack of potatoes. I burrowed down in among the dirty potatoes and held my breath. The cook must have started taking his trousers right off, because now they were shouting, "It's not in there! There's no mice in there, you silly twerp!" "There was! I swear there was!" the man was shouting back. "You've never had a mouse in your trousers! You don't know what it feels like!" The fact that a tiny little creature like me had caused such a commotion among a bunch of grown-up men gave me a happy feeling. I couldn't help smiling in spite of the pain in my tail. I stayed where I was until I was sure they had forgotten about me. Then I crept out of the potatoes and cautiously poked my tiny head over the edge of the sack. Once again, the kitchen was all of a bustle, with cooks and waiters rushing about everywhere. I saw the waiter who had come in earlier with a complaint about tough meat coming in again. "Hey, boys," he shouted. "I asked the old hag if the new bit of meat was any better, and she said it was perfectly delicious. She said it was really tasty." I had to get out of that kitchen and back to my grandmother. There was only one way to do this. I must make a dash clear across the floor and out through the door behind one of the waiters. I stayed quite still, watching for my chance. My tail was hurting terribly. I curled it round so as to have a look at it. About 2 inches of it were missing, and it was bleeding quite a lot. There was a waiter loading up with a batch of plates full of pink ice cream. He had a plate in each hand and 2 more balanced on each arm. He went towards the door. He pushed it open with his shoulder. I leapt out of the sack of potatoes and went across that kitchen floor and into the dining room like a streak of light, and I didn't stop running until I was underneath my grandmother's table. It was lovely to see my grandmother's feet again in those old-fashioned black shoes with their straps and buttons. I shinned up one of her legs and landed on her lap. "Hello, Grandmama," I whispered. "I'm back. I did it. I poured it all into their soup." Her hand came down and caressed me. "Well done, my darling," she whispered back. "Well done, you. They are at this very moment eating that soup." Suddenly she withdrew her hand. "You're bleeding," she whispered. "My darling, what's happened to you?" "One of the cooks cut off my tail with a carving knife," I whispered back. "It hurts like bilio." "Let me look at it," she said. She bent her head and examined my tail. "You poor little thing," she whispered. "I'm going to bandage it up with my handkerchief. That will stop the bleeding." She fished a small lace-edged handkerchief out of her bag, and this she somehow managed to wrap around the end of my tail. "You'll be all right now," she said. "Just try to forget about it." "Did you really manage to pour the whole bottle into their soup?" "Every drop," I said. "Do you think you could put me where I can watch them?" "Yes," she answered. "My handbag is on your own empty chair beside me. I'm going to pop you in there now, and you can peep out as long as you are careful not to be seen. Bruno is there as well, but take no notice of him. I gave him a roll to eat, and that's keeping him busy for a while." Her hand closed around me, and I was lifted off her lap and transferred to the handbag. "Hello, Bruno," I said.
"This is a great roll," he said, nibbling away in the bottom of the bag, "but I wish there was butter on it."
I peered over the top of the handbag. I could see the witches quite clearly, sitting at their 2 long tables in the centre of the room. They had finished their soup now, and the waiters were clearing away the plates. My grandmother had lit up one of her disgusting black cigars and was puffing smoke over everything. All around us, the summer holiday guests in this rather grand hotel were babbling away and tucking into their suppers. About half of them were old people with walking sticks, but there were also plenty of families with a husband, a wife, and several children. They were all well-to-do people. You had to be if you wanted to stay in the Hotel Magnificent.
"That's her, Grandmama," I whispered. "That's the Grand High Witch."
"I know," my grandmother whispered back. "She's the tiny one in black, sitting at the head of the nearest table."
"She could kill you," I whispered. "She could kill anyone in this room with her white-hot sparks."
"Look out," my grandmother whispered. "The waiter's coming."
I popped down out of sight, and I heard William saying, "Your roast lamb, madam.
And which vegetable would you like, peas or carrots?
Carrots, please, my grandmother said, but no potatoes.
I heard the carrots being dished out. There was a pause. Then my grandmother's voice was whispering.
It's all right. He's gone.
I popped my head up again.
Surely no one will notice my little head sticking out like this, I whispered.
No, she answered. I don't suppose they will. My problem is I've got to talk to you without moving my lips.
You're doing beautifully, I said.
I've counted the witches, she said. There aren't nearly as many as you thought.
You were just guessing, weren't you, when you said 200?
It just seemed like 200, I said.
I was wrong, too, my grandmother said. I thought there were a lot more witches than this in England.
How many are there? I asked.
84, she said.
There were 85, I said.
But one of them got fried.
At that moment, I caught sight of Mr. Jenkins, Bruno's father, heading straight for our table.
Look out, Grandmama, I whispered. Here comes Bruno's father.
Mr. Jenkins and his son. Mr. Jenkins came striding up to our table with a very purposeful look on his face.
Where's that grandson of yours? He said to my grandmother. He spoke rudely and looked very angry.
My grandmother put on her frostiest look, but didn't answer him.
My guess is that he and my son Bruno are up to some devilment, Mr. Jenkins went on. Bruno hasn't turned up for a supper, and it takes a lot to make that boy miss his food.
I must admit he has a very healthy appetite, my grandmother said.
My feeling is that you're in on this as well, Mr. Jenkins said. I don't know who the devil you are, and I don't much care, but you played a nasty trick on me and my wife this afternoon. You put a dirty little mouse on the table. That makes me think all three of you are up to something. So if you know where Bruno's hiding, kindly tell me at once.
That was no trick I played on you, my grandmother said. That mouse I tried to give you was your own little boy, Bruno. I was being kind to you. I was trying to restore him to the bosom of his family. You refused to take him in.
What the blazes do you mean, madam? Shouted Mr. Jenkins. My son isn't a mouse!
His black moustache was jumping up and down like crazy as he spoke.
Come on, woman, where is he? Out with it!
The family at the table nearest to us had all stopped eating and were staring at Mr. Jenkins. My grandmother sat there puffing away calmly at her black cigar.
I can well understand your anger, Mr. Jenkins, she said. Any other English father would be just as cross as you are. But over in Norway, where I come from, we are quite used to these sorts of happenings. We have learned to accept them as part of everyday life.
You must be mad, woman, cried Mr. Jenkins. Where is Bruno? If you don't tell me at once, I shall summon the police.
Bruno is a mouse, my grandmother said, calm as ever.
He most certainly is not a mouse,
shouted Mr. Jenkins.
Oh, yes, I am,
Bruno said, poking his head up out of the handbag. Mr. Jenkins leapt about 3 feet into the air.
Hello, Dad,
Bruno said. He had a silly sort of mousy grin on his face. Mr. Jenkins' mouth dropped open so wide I could see the gold fillings in his back teeth.
Don't worry, Dad, Bruno went on. It's not as bad as all that, just so long as the cat doesn't get me. Bruno, stammered Mr. Jenkins. No more school, said Bruno, grinning a broad and asinine mouse grin. No more homework. I shall live in the kitchen cupboard and feast on raisins and honey.
But Bruno, stammered Mr. Jenkins again.
How did this happen?
The poor man had no wind left in his sails at all. Witches, my grandmother said. The witches did it.
I can't have a mouse for a son, shrieked Mr. Jenkins.
You've got one, my grandmother said. Be nice to him, Mr. Jenkins.
Mrs. Jenkins will go crazy, yelled Mr. Jenkins. She can't stand the things.
She'll just have to get used to him, my grandmother said. I hope you don't keep a cat in the house.
We do, cried Mr. Jenkins. Topsy is my wife's favourite creature.
Then you just have to get rid of Topsy, my grandmother said. Your son is more important than your cat.
He certainly is, Bruno shouted from inside the handbag. You tell Mum she's got to get rid of Topsy before I go home.
By now, half the dining room was watching our little group. Knives and forks and spoons had been put down, and all over the place heads were turning round to stare at Mr. Jenkins as he stood there spluttering and shouting. They couldn't see either Bruno or me, and they were wondering what all the fuss was about.
By the way, my grandmother said, would you like to know who did this to him?
There was a mischievous little smile on her face, and I could see that she was about to get Mr. Jenkins into trouble.
Who? He cried. Who did it?
That woman over there, my grandmother said. The small one in a black dress at the head of the long table.
She's RSPCC, cried Mr. Jenkins. She's the chairwoman.
No, she's not, my grandmother said. She's the grand high witch of all the world.
You mean she did it? That skinny little woman over there?
Shouted Mr. Jenkins, pointing at her with a long finger.
By Gad, I'll have my lawyers onto her for this. I'll make her pay through the nose.
I wouldn't do anything rash, my grandmother said to him. That woman has magic powers. She might decide to turn you into something even sillier than a mouse. A cockroach, perhaps.
Turn me into a cockroach?
Shouted Mr. Jenkins, puffing out his chest.
I'd like to see her try.
He swung around and started marching across the dining room towards the Grand High Witch's table. My grandmother and I watched him. Bruno had jumped up on our table and was also watching his father. Practically everyone in the dining room was watching Mr. Jenkins now.
I stayed where I was, peeping out of my grandmother's handbag. I thought it might be wiser to stay put.
The triumph. Mr. Jenkins had not gone more than a few paces towards the Grand High Witch's table when a piercing scream rose high above all the other noises in the room, and at the same moment I saw the Grand High Witch go shooting up into the air. Now she was standing on her chair, still screaming. Now she was on the tabletop, waving her arms.
What on earth's happening, Grandmama?
Wait, my grandmother said. Keep quiet and watch.
Suddenly, all the other witches, more than 80 of them, were beginning to scream and jump up out of their seats as though spikes were being stuck into their bottoms. Some were standing on chairs, some were up on the tables, and all of them were wiggling about and waving their arms in the most extraordinary manner.
All at once, they became quiet.
Then they stiffened. Every single witch stood there as stiff and silent as a corpse.
The whole room became deathly still.
They're shrinking, Grandmama, I said. They're shrinking just like I did.
I know they are, my grandmother said.
It's the mouse maker, I cried. Look! Some of them are growing fur on their faces!
Why is it working so quickly, Grandmama?
I'll tell you why, my grandmother said. Because all of them have had massive overdoses, just like you. It's thrown the alarm clock right out of whack.
Everyone in the dining room was standing up now to get a better view. People were moving closer. They were beginning to crowd round the two long tables. My grandmother lifted Bruno and me up so that we wouldn't miss any of the fun. In her excitement, she jumped up onto her chair so that she could see over the heads of the crowd. In another few seconds, all the witches had completely disappeared, and the tops of the two long tables were swarming with small brown mice. All over the dining room, women were screaming, and strong men were turning white in the face and shouting, "It's
crazy. This can't happen. Let's get the heck out of here, quick.
Waiters were attacking the mice with chairs and wine bottles and anything else that came to hand. I saw a chef in a tall white hat rushing out from the kitchen brandishing a frying pan, and another one just behind him was wielding a carving knife above his head, and everyone was yelling, "Mice! Mice! Mice! We must get rid of the mice!"
Only the children in the room were really enjoying it. They all seemed to know instinctively that something good was going on right there in front of them, and they were clapping and cheering and laughing like mad.
"It's time to go," my grandmother said. "Our work is done."
She got down off her chair and picked up her handbag and slung it over her arm. She had me in her right hand and Bruno in her left.
"Bruno," she said, "the time has come to restore you to the famous bosom of your family."
"My mum's not very crazy about mice," Bruno said.
"So I noticed," my grandmother said. "She'll just have to get used to you, won't she?"
It was not difficult to find Mr. and Mrs. Jenkins. You could hear Mrs. Jenkins' shrill voice all over the room.
"Herbert!" it was screaming. "Herbert, get me out of here! There's mice everywhere! They're going up my skirts!"
She had her arms high up around her husband, and from where I was, she seemed to be swinging from his neck.
My grandmother advanced upon them and thrust Bruno into Mr. Jenkins' hand.
"Here's your little boy," she said. "He needs to go on a diet."
"Hi, Dad," Bruno said. "Hi, Mum."
Mrs. Jenkins screamed even louder. My grandmother, with me in her hand, turned and marched out of the room. She went straight across the hotel lobby and out through the front entrance into the open air.
Outside, it was a lovely, warm evening, and I could hear the waves breaking on the beach just across the road from the hotel.
"Is there a taxi here?" my grandmother said to the tall doorman in his green uniform.
"Certainly, madam," he said,
and he put two fingers into his mouth and blew a long, shrill whistle.
I watched him with envy. For weeks I had been trying to whistle like that, but I hadn't succeeded once. Now I never would. The taxi came. The driver was an oldish man with a thick black drooping moustache. The moustache hung over his mouth like the roots of some plant.
"Where to, madam?"
he asked. Suddenly he caught sight of me, a little mouse nestling in my grandmother's hand.
"Blimey," he said, "what's that?"
"It's my grandson," my grandmother said. "Drive us to the station, please."
"I always liked mice," the old taxi driver said. "I used to keep hundreds of them when I was a boy. Mice is the fastest breeders in the world, did you know that, ma'am? So if he's your grandson, then I reckon you'll be having a few great-grandsons to go with him in a couple of weeks' time."
"Drive us to the station, please," my grandmother said, looking prim.
"Yes, ma'am," he said, "right away."
My grandmother got into the back of the taxi and sat down and put me on her lap.
"Are we going home?" I asked her.
"Yes," she answered, "back to Norway."
"Hooray!" I cried. "Oh, hooray, hooray, hooray!"
"I thought you'd like that," she said.
"But what about our luggage?"
"Who cares about luggage?" she said.
The taxi was driving through the streets of Bournemouth, and this was the time of day when the pavements were crowded with holiday makers, all wandering about aimlessly with nothing to do.
"How are you feeling, my darling?" my grandmother said.
"Fine," I said. "Quite marvellous."
She began stroking the fur on the back of my neck with one finger.
"We have accomplished great feats today," she said.
"It's been terrific," I said.
"Absolutely terrific."
The Heart of a Mouse. It was lovely to be back in Norway once again, in my grandmother's fine old house. But now that I was so small, everything looked different, and it took me quite a while to find my way around.
Mine was a world of carpets and table legs and chair legs and the little crannies behind large pieces of furniture. A closed door could not be opened, and nothing could be reached that was on a table. But after a few days, my grandmother began to invent gadgets for me in order to make life a bit easier. She got a carpenter to put together a number of slim, tall stepladders, and she placed one of these against each table in the house so that I could climb up whenever I wanted to. She herself invented a wonderful door-opening device made out of wires and springs and pulleys, with heavy weights dangling on cords, and soon every door in the house had a door-opener on it. All I had to do was to press my front paws onto a tiny wooden platform, and hey presto, a spring would stretch and a weight would drop and the door would swing open. Next, she rigged up an equally ingenious system whereby I could switch on the light whenever I entered a room at night. I cannot explain how it worked because I know nothing about electricity, but there was a little button let into the floor near the door in every room in the house, and when I pressed the button gently with one paw, the light would come on. When I pressed it a second time, the light would go off again. My grandmother made me a tiny toothbrush, using a matchstick for the handle. And into this, she stuck little bits of bristle that she had snipped off one of her hairbrushes. "You must not get any holes in your teeth," she said. "I can't take a mouse to a dentist. He'd think I was crazy." "It's funny," I said, "but ever since I became a mouse, I've hated the taste of sweets and chocolate. So I don't think I'll get any holes."
"You are still going to brush your teeth after every meal," my grandmother said.
And I did. For a bathtub, she gave me a silver sugar basin, and I bathed in it every night before going to bed. She allowed no one else into the house, not even a servant or a cook. We kept entirely to ourselves, and we were very happy in each other's company. One evening, as I lay on my grandmother's lap in front of the fire, she said to me, "I wonder what happened to that little Bruno. I wouldn't be surprised if his father gave him to the hall porter to drown in the fire bucket," I answered. "I'm afraid you may be right," my grandmother said. "The poor little thing." We were silent for a few minutes, my grandmother puffing away at her black cigar, while I dozed comfortably in the warmth. "Can I ask you something, Grandmama?" I said.
"Ask me anything you like, my darling."
"How long does a mouse live?"
"Ah," she said, "I've been waiting for you to ask me that."
There was a silence. She sat there smoking away and gazing at the fire. "Well," I said, "how long do we live?" asked Mice.
"I have been reading about mice," she said. "I have been trying to find out everything I can about them."
"Go on then, Grandmama. Why don't you tell me?"
"If you really want to know," she said, "I'm afraid a mouse doesn't live for a very long time."
"How long?" I asked.
"Well, an ordinary mouse only lives for about 3 years," she said. "But you are not an ordinary mouse. You are a mouse person, and that is a very different matter."
"How different?" I asked. "How long does a mouse person live, Grandmama?"
"Longer," she said, "much longer. A mouse person will almost certainly live for 3 times as long as an ordinary mouse," my grandmother said. "About 9 years."
"Good!" I cried. "That's great! It's the best news I've ever had!"
"Why do you say that?" she asked, surprised.
"Because I would never want to live longer than you," I said. "I couldn't stand being looked after by anybody else." There was a short silence. She had a way of fondling me behind the ears with the tip of one finger. It felt lovely. "How old are you, Grandmama?" I asked.
"I'm 86," she said.
"Will you live another 8 or 9 years?"
"I might," she said, "with a bit of luck." "You've got to," I said, "because by then I'll be a very old mouse, and you'll be a very old grandmother, and soon after that we'll both die together." "That would be perfect," she said.
I had a little doze after that. I just shut my eyes and thought of nothing, and felt at peace with the world.
"Would you like me to tell you something about yourself that is very interesting?" my grandmother said.
"Yes, please, Grandmama," I said, without opening my eyes.
"I couldn't believe it at first, but apparently it's quite true," she said.
"What is it?" I asked.
"The heart of a mouse," she said. "And that means your heart is beating at the rate of 500 times a minute. Isn't that amazing?"
"That's not possible," I said, opening my eyes wide.
"It's as true as I'm sitting here," she said. "It's a sort of a miracle."
"That's nearly 9 beats every second, I cried, working it out of my head.
"Correct," she said. "Your heart is going so fast, it's impossible to hear the separate beats. All one hears is a soft humming sound."
She was wearing a lace dress, and the lace kept tickling my nose. I had to rest my head on my front paws. "Have you ever heard my heart humming away, Grandmama?" I asked her.
"Often," she said. "I hear it when you're lying very close to me on the pillow at night."
The two of us remained silent in front of the fire for a long time after that, thinking about these wonderful things.
"My darling," she said at last, "are you sure you don't mind being a mouse for the rest of your life?"
"I don't mind at all," I said. "It doesn't matter who you are or what you look like, so long as somebody loves you."
It's off to work we go.
For supper that evening, my grandmother had a plain omelette and one slice of bread.
I had a piece of that brown Norwegian goat's milk cheese, known as Jetost, which I had loved even when I was a boy. We ate in front of the fire, my grandmother in her armchair and me on the table with my cheese on a small plate.
"Grandmama," I said, "now that we have done away with the Grand High Witch, will all the other witches in the world gradually disappear?"
"I'm quite sure they won't," she answered. I stopped chewing and stared at her.
"But they must," I cried. "Surely they must."
"I'm afraid not," she said.
"But if she's not there any longer, how are they going to get all the money they need? And who is going to give them orders and jazz them up at the annual meetings and invent all their magic formulas for them?"
"When a queen bee dies, there is always another queen in the hive ready to take her place," my grandmother said. "It's the same with witches. In the great headquarters where the Grand High Witch lives, there is always another Grand High Witch waiting in the wings to take over should anything happen."
"Oh, no," I cried. "That means everything we did was for nothing. Have I become a mouse for nothing at all?"
"We saved the children of England," she said. "I don't call that nothing."
I know," I cried, "but that's not nearly good enough. I felt sure that all the witches of the world would slowly fade away after we had got rid of their leader. Now you tell me that everything is going to go on just the same as before."
"Not exactly as before," my grandmother said. "For instance,
There are no longer any witches in England. That's quite a triumph, isn't it?
But what about the rest of the world? I cried. What about America and France and Holland and Germany? And what about Norway?
You must not think I've been sitting back and doing nothing these last few days, she said. I have been giving a great deal of thought and time to that particular problem.
I was looking up at her face when she said this, and all at once I noticed that a little secret smile was beginning to spread slowly around her eyes and the corners of her mouth.
Why are you smiling, Grandmama? I asked her.
I have some rather interesting news for you, she said.
What news?
Shall I tell it to you right from the beginning?
Yes, please,
I said. I like good news.
She had finished her omelette, and I had had enough of my cheese. She wiped her lips with a napkin and said,
As soon as we arrived back in Norway, I picked up the telephone and made a call to England.
Who in England, Grandmama?
To the chief of police in Bournemouth, my darling. I told him I was the chief of police for the whole of Norway and that I was interested in the peculiar happenings that had taken place recently in the Hotel Magnificent.
Now, hang on a sec, Grandmama, I said. There's no way an English policeman is going to believe that you are the head of the Norwegian police.
I'm very good at imitating a man's voice, she said. Of course he believed me. The policeman in Bournemouth was honoured to get a call from the chief of police for the whole of Norway.
So what did you ask him?
I asked him for the name and address of the lady who had been living in room 454 in the Hotel Magnificent. The one who disappeared.
You mean the Grand High Witch? I cried.
Yes, my darling.
And did he give it to you?
Naturally, he gave it to me. One policeman will always help another policeman.
By golly, you've got a nerve, Grandmama.
I wanted her address, my grandmother said.
But did he know her address?
He did indeed. They had found her passport in her room, and her address was in it. It was also in the hotel register. Everyone who stays in a hotel has to put a name and address in the book.
But surely the Grand High Witch wouldn't have put her real name and address in the hotel register, I said.
Why ever not? My grandmother said. Nobody in the world had the faintest idea who she was except her witches. Wherever she went, people simply knew her as a nice lady. You, my darling, and you alone, were the only non-witch ever to see her with her mask off. Even in her home district, in the village where she lived, people knew her as a kindly and very wealthy baroness who gave large sums of money to charity. I have checked up on that. I was getting excited now.
And that address you got, Grandmama, that must have been the secret headquarters of the Grand High Witch.
It still is, my grandmother said. And that will be where the new Grand High Witch is certain to be living at this very moment with her retinue of special assistant witches. Important rulers are always surrounded by a large retinue of assistants.
Where is her headquarters, Grandmama? I cried. Tell me quick where it is.
It is a castle, my grandmother said. And the fascinating thing is that in that castle will be all the names and addresses of all the witches in the world. How else could a Grand High Witch run her business? How else could she summon the witches of the various countries to their annual meetings?
Where is the castle, Grandmama? I cried impatiently. Which country? Tell me quick.
Yes, she said.
Norway, I cried.
Right first time, she answered. High up in the mountains above a small village.
This was thrilling news. I did a little dance of excitement on the tabletop.
My grandmother was getting pretty worked up herself, and now she heaved herself out of her chair and began pacing up and down the room, thumping the carpet with her stick.
So we have work to do, you and I, she cried out. We have a great task ahead of us. Thank heavens you are a mouse. A mouse can go anywhere. All I'll have to do is put you down somewhere near the Grand High Witch's castle, and you will very easily be able to get inside it and creep around looking and listening to your heart's content. I will, I answered. No one will ever see me. Moving about in a big castle will be child's play compared with going into a crowded kitchen full of cooks and waiters. You could spend days in there, if necessary, my grandmother cried. In her excitement, she was waving her stick all over the place, and suddenly she knocked over a tall and very beautiful vase that went crashing onto the floor and smashed into a million pieces.
Forget it, she said. It's only Ming.
You could spend weeks in that castle if you wanted to, and they'd never know you were there. I myself would get a room in the village, and you could sneak out of the castle and have supper with me every night and tell me what was going on. I could, I cried out. And inside the castle, I could go snooping around simply everywhere.
But your main job, of course, my grandmother said, would be to destroy every witch in the place. That really would be the end of the whole organization.
Me destroy them? I cried. How could I do that?
Can't you guess? She said.
Tell me, I said. Mouse maker, my grandmother shouted. Formula 86 delayed action, a mouse maker all over again. You will feed it to everyone in the castle by putting drops of it into their food. You do remember the recipe, don't you? Every bit of it, I answered. You mean we're going to make it ourselves?
Why not? She cried. If they can make it, so can we. It's just a question of knowing what goes into it.
Who's going to climb up the tall trees to get the Gruntles' eggs? I asked her.
I will, she cried. I'll do it myself. There's plenty of life in this old dog yet.
I think I'd better do that part of it, Grandmama. You might come a cropper.
Those are just details, she cried, waving her stick again. We shall let nothing stand in our way.
And what happens after that? I asked her. After the new Grand High Witch and everyone else in the castle have been turned into mice?
Then the castle will be completely empty, and I shall come in and join you.
And wait, I cried. Hold on, Grandmama. I've just had a nasty thought.
What nasty thought, she said.
When the mouse maker turned me into a mouse, I said, I didn't become just any old ordinary mouse that you catch with mouse traps. I became a talking, thinking, intelligent mouse person who wouldn't go near a mouse trap.
My grandmother stopped dead in her tracks. She already knew what was coming next.
Therefore, I went on, if we use the mouse maker to turn the new Grand High Witch and all the other witches in the castle into mice, the whole place will be swarming with very clever, very nasty, very dangerous, talking, thinking mouse witches. They'll all be witches in mouse's clothing. And that, I added, could be very horrible indeed.
By golly, you're right, she cried. That never occurred to me.
I couldn't possibly take on a castle full of mouse witches, I said.
Nor could I, she said. They'd have to be got rid of at once. They'd have to be smashed and bashed and chopped up into little pieces, exactly as they were in the Hotel Magnificent.
I'm not doing that, I said. I couldn't anyway. I don't think you could either, Grandmama. A mouse traps wouldn't be the slightest use. By the way, I added, the Grand High Witch who did me in was wrong about mouse traps, wasn't she?
Yes,
my grandmother said impatiently. But I'm not concerned with that Grand High Witch. She's been chopped up long ago by the hotel chef. It's the new Grand High Witch we've got to deal with now, the one up in the castle and all her assistants. A Grand High Witch is bad enough when she's disguised as a lady, but just think of what she could do if she were a mouse. She could go anywhere. I've got it! I shouted, leaping about a foot in the air. I've got the answer! Tell me, my grandmother snapped.
The answer is cats, I shouted. Bring on the cats!
My grandmother stared at me.
Then a great grin spread over her face and she shouted, It's brilliant! Absolutely brilliant!
Shove half a dozen cats into that castle, I cried, and they'll kill every mouse in the place in 5 minutes. I don't care how clever they are.
You're a magician,
my grandmother shouted, starting to wave her stick about once again.
Look out for the vases, Grandmama. To heck with the vases, she shouted. I'm so thrilled, I don't care if I break the lot.
Just one thing, I said. You've got to make absolutely sure I'm well out of the way myself before you put the cats in.
That's a promise, she said.
What will we do after the cats have killed all the mice? I asked her.
I'll take all the cats back to the village, and then you and I will have the castle completely to ourselves.
And then? I said.
Then we should go through the records and get the names and addresses of all the witches in the whole wide world.
And after that? I said, quivering with excitement.
After that, my darling, the greatest task of all will begin for you and me. We shall pack our bags and go travelling all over the world. In every country we visit, we shall seek out the houses where the witches are living. We shall find each house, one by one, and having found it, you will creep inside and leave your little drops of deadly mouse maker in the bread, or the cornflakes, or the rice pudding, or whatever food you see lying about. It will be a triumph, my darling. A colossal, unbeatable triumph. We shall do it entirely by ourselves, just you and me. That will be our work for the rest of our lives.
My grandmother picked me up off the table and kissed me on the nose.
Oh, my goodness me. We are going to be busy these next few weeks and months and years, she cried.
I think we are, I said. But what fun and excitement it's going to be.
You can say that again. My grandmother cried, giving me another kiss. I can't wait to get started.
Hello, I'm Miranda Richardson. We hope that you've enjoyed this production of The Witches by Roald Dahl, which was executive produced by Patty Perus. The Witches is a production of Penguin Audio, a member of Penguin Group USA, Inc. Copyright 2013. All rights reserved. The book, The Witches, is available wherever puffin books are sold.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.